There's two headings. Are you recording this?
Yes, if that's wonderful. All right by you.
There was, of course, James Connolly and Francis Sheehy Skeffington. They were very close, and they were very, very left, you'd call it, I suppose. And they had the movement here. Then Mrs. Skeffington was a warrior on her own, quite apart from anybody else. But there were various people. The Citizen Army gave women equal status to men. And actually, in the rising of 1916, in one of the posts in Dublin, Dr. Lynn, the medical officer of the Citizen Army, was the senior surviving officer when the others had been killed. Oh dear, I'm very scattered.
Now this is very interesting.
Is it?
Would you say that the nationalist movement, the Republican movement, cuts across the women's movement in Ireland?
I think it got a great inspiration from the women's movement.
Did it really?
Because people were... Well, first of all, Mrs. Skeffington, she was a tremendous hater. Her husband was killed. Do you know enough about 1916 to know what happened to him?
Yes.
Well, now, she followed the English around the world, you may say. And she had a correspondence. She had been running a feminist paper.
The Irish Citizen.
Yeah. And she had worldwide contacts, I suppose, through that, and through their stuff coming in to her, so that wherever she went, as the widow of 1916, she was able to do things that none of the men were able to do. She was the only person who got an interview with President Wilson. None of the men, De Valera, nobody got an interview with the president, but Mrs. Skeff got it. And she was a member of the executive of Sinn Féin, and you saw there she was involved in courts and a lot.
Yes, I've got the thing over here. I hadn't realised that she was, it says here, this is, I don't know what periodical this is, actually.
I don't know whether I do either.
It's May 1946, anyway. But it's...
The 1913 strike. Connolly had always a great compassion for the sufferings of women in that kind of battle, you see. And he made what was called the co-op. And I have failed to find for you Helena Maloney's stuff that I have a bulky envelope from her. But this co-op was, they managed with great trouble. They got a lot of help from England, I think, they were sympathizers, to buy sewing machines. And they set up some of the women in the co-op, and they were making various stuff for their own purposes, like a Connolly, like a shirt with a red hand shirt. That's the red hand of Ulster, you see, with embroidered, and they were making flags. And they worked on contracts. They got war contracts to do. Anything.
So you think there's an affinity between the women's movement in Ireland and the nationalist movement?
Oh, certainly. Mm. Certainly, the nationalist movement would be lost without them, in my opinion. Mm. Everybody mightn't agree to that.
What did they do in the movement, women, really, would you say? What was their part? What was their role?
At a time of great danger, when you wanted public bodies to make a stand, it was queer how easy it was for women to get to be candidates. People were prepared to yield to them on that they couldn't otherwise, because a man would be in jail, and there wasn't very much imprisonment of women during the Black and Tan time.
I see. In a sense, because they're women, they can get away with more.
They got away with a lot more. And there were some people on both sides, who some women who were in politics for years afterwards. They came up at the time of the local government election, which was in 1920, and Sinn Féin made their candidates in this election take a pledge, but it was a completely free election for anybody else, unionist, anyone else. I could show you some shops in Dublin where the people were under various headings, like taxpayers or something like that, don't you know, that got into election. And then there was an affinity also with the Lady Aberdeen got the credit for leading a campaign against tuberculosis. Everybody doesn't agree that she was the main person, but she was the Viceroy's wife, you see, and she made great going on there. And there was a system under this of having doctors and people visiting the slums and trying to improve, provide facilities and educational and civilized facilities for slums. Well, now, some of the doctors who served the IRA in the War of Independence had been Lady Aberdeen's doctors.
I see.
Started with her, and they got the social sense. Dr. Lynn wasn't one of those. She was one of the first doctors, Dr. Kathleen Lynn, one of the first doctors to get her degree, to get her qualifications. I think probably in Trinity. She was a Protestant from the West. And she was a terrific Republican. And she was the one who was military officer to the Citizen Army, to Connolly's Citizen Army. And now she started the first children's hospital in Europe.
Oh yes, and Mrs. Skeffington was interested in
St. Alton's Hospital.
Yes.
And a younger doctor associated with that, Dr. Dorothy Price, she introduced and started working on this vaccination of babies, which cured the
diphtheria of it, or
it was a diarrhea, endemic
enteritis,
yes.
Mm.
And that was done in, I think she was the first in Europe doing that. Mm. They were very, very good.
But if you say there's an affinity then between these two,
yes,
why has it taken so long for women to organise themselves in Ireland and for the feminist movement to grow? Because you'd think it would grow faster if there's an affinity of that sort after the revolution, after independence, wouldn't you?
Well, that puzzles me. I have no explanation.
Mm.
De Valera was very, he wasn't helpful. He certainly wasn't helpful. I have a wonderful postcard. I wonder, would you like it, or could I find it?
Because, you see, Mrs. Skeffington was very opposed to the 1937 Constitution,
yes,
wasn't she?
Yes.
And the Constitution didn't do much for women, did it? I mean, it wasn't.
No. No, and this postcard had De Valera sleeping bed, you see, and the women haunting his dreams.
Oh, I've seen that. I've seen that.
Mm,
I know the one you mean, yes, I've seen it.
Where do we go from here? I'm being very scattered.
No, but it's very, very interesting. Anyway, I've come on you unannounced, really, but it's presumably partly a question of religion, isn't it, that the Roman Catholic Church has such a traditional attitude to the role of women in the family, and it's very difficult for nationalists or anyone else in Ireland to overcome that problem, isn't it?
Yes, at first women got elected in the second Dáil Éireann. First Dáil Éireann, you had Countess Markovitch. She was the first person who had a right to go to Westminster.
Yes.
I tell you a funny story about that. There was a communist MP called Sacklett Vala.
Yes,
isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
This would be about 1922.
Yes.
And we were getting driven into the ground here with the counter-revolution here. It was fierce and very anti-woman, Cosgrave and so on. But the women, I know that Count Makovich was, she didn't take her up her locker in the House of Commons, but anyhow, Sacklett Vala let them have his office. And a friend of mine called Myra Kennedy O'Byrne, she was very, a very dignified figure, always tremendously well-dressed. And the policeman used to salute her every morning going into the House of Commons, whatever. I don't know the geography there. But one day they visited her flat, and when she came home, she heard that. And she went down to the police barrack, whatever it was, and said, "I am Miss Kennedy O'Byrne, what did you require from me?" And they all apologized.
Were you yourself in the suffrage movement at all?
No, I wasn't. I was in Cumanamon. You see, we got into the war. I might have been only for that. There are numbers of people in Dublin who would know much more than I did about it. The second part of what I wanted to tell you is about the tremendous sympathy and help we got in the very worst time, Black and Tans, from women coming over.
From England?
From England.
Yes, such as the Pedic Lawrences, you mean, or suffragettes from England?
I don't
know. Lady Stocks.
There were the Women's League for Peace and Freedom.
I
do
know.
You know anything about
that? Yes, I do, yes. Evans, what's her name? Dorothy Evans would be there.
Afraid I don't remember her name.
Lawrences, yes, I mean, it's an important organisation there. They were very helpful to you in that.
Oh, tremendously, and they came humbly, you know, they weren't staying in big hotels. They settled, they went into the small hotels in Harcourt Street, and they really got what was going on. And they were great friends, and they're very brave. Very, very brave.
Why, when you say brave, how were they brave?
Well, it was really dangerous. The Tans were no joke, you know.
You mean getting information and passing it back to England about conditions?
The streets, where there were, when there were things going on, the streets of Dublin or the streets anywhere else, took courage. I think it took a lot of courage, and I'd continue to say they were brave. I might be able to explain it.
It was courageous even to come over, let alone to do this.
Yeah. Do you ever hear of Lady Snowden?
Oh, yes, Ethel Snowden, you mean.
That's right,
yes. Yes.
I was given her to bring to the country once.
Were you really?
And the week before, I used to be sent on different missions to the country to find out what had happened when people had been killed and so on. Mine was only a mission of going about after the funerals were over and investigating in daylight, but the people in the country had to take it all in the dark, you know, in the night and at first hand. But the week before she was Mrs. Snowden that time, she came. I had been at Kingsbridge railway station for a morning train to Tipperary, which was a martial law area, and passengers were all grouped surrounded by soldiers, you see. And then we were told which carriages to get into, and we were put all along in the windows, you see. And I was alone, and there was a girl opposite to me, and I think we were both exulting that they were in such a panic that they were afraid to sit in a train without making sandbags of us, you see. And we listened to, these were auxiliaries, and they were talking about the service in Ireland compared with the service they could get elsewhere. And they talked about the Persian Gulf or somewhere like that, where the money wasn't as good, but life was easier. It was a new eye-opener for me, you see. And they were getting great money in Ireland. But then we were beginning to find out their houses, and the ones that burnt houses here were getting a bit of a knocking about in England too. But any time, the next week when I came up with Mrs. Skeffington, I was full of confidence that she would be a sandbag on the way down to Tipperary. You remember her appearance, or you couldn't remember her appearance?
I've seen photographs of her.
She was an actress, you know. She was a fine, splendid-looking blonde, pink and white blonde, as soft as butter, if you like. But I got her into Tipperary. And the week before, I had followed a murder gang that killed people in the night, and I brought her on this round again, and there was a van.
This is Ethel Snowden you're talking about, yes.
There was a cottage on the hill, and a son of this house had been shot on his doorstep within about 3 weeks.